All right, let's get started. Again, we should be you should be able to hear the my voice and see the screen, and we'll be ready to start the presentation right now. So once again, everybody, welcome to today's Fulbright Scholar webinar. My name is Michelle Belorchi, and I'm an outreach and recruitment specialist at the Institute of International Education in Washington, D.C. And today's webinar focuses on India. So we are going to be discussing the awards to India, and I'm delighted to have a recently returned Fulbrighter from India, Daniel A. Kellen, who is the Director of Drama Education at the Honolulu Theater for Youth. And his grant, he recently returned in January from Tripura, so I'm happy to have him join us today. Over the course of the hour, we will be discussing a little bit about the program and the award opportunities, eligibility requirements, and then really going in a deep dive into Daniel's experience, what led him to Fulbright, how he selected India and the host institution, and those kind of things. And we'd like to leave about 20 minutes at the end for questions from all of you, so that you can ask him directly about his experience. I'm also happy to take questions about program requirements and things like that. So without further ado, let's begin. So a little bit about the mission and the history of the Fulbright program. We have 160 partner countries that we have programs in, and specifically for the scholar program, it's about 135. So there's lots of different unique opportunities for faculty, independent scholars, administrators, artists, journalists, lawyers, professionals from all backgrounds to teach and research around the world. And the mission of the Fulbright program is to foster mutual understanding between people and nations, and ultimately to improve lives around the world. We are excited about celebrating our 75th anniversary next year. Fulbright has been around for quite some time, and it is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State. It is the flagship educational and cultural exchange program, and since its inception, it has been administered by IIE. And I'm based in Washington, D.C., but we have several offices around the country. I'd also like to mention that a lot of our partner countries do contribute financially to the program. And so this program is highly leveraged around the world. There's a lot of interest in bringing U.S. scholars, faculty, and professionals to teach and research and collaborate with people all around the world. Diversity and inclusion is really at the core of our outreach and recruitment strategy. The Fulbright program strives to have a cohort of grantees that reflect the breadth and the depth of U.S. society in terms of all backgrounds, so we really encourage everyone to think about applying. Even if you think you might not be a good fit, there's probably a Fulbright opportunity out there for you, so please do contact us if you're interested. And just to give you an idea of the scope of the program, we have about 800 grants for U.S. scholars and administrators. So it might be on the smaller side of things in terms of the larger Fulbright opportunities, but certainly if you compare it to other awards out there and other cooperating agencies funding agencies, 800 grants is our annual offering, and so there are 800 U.S. scholar opportunities every year. So this is a great opportunity for you to consider if you're interested in teaching and researching. And since our inception, we've had about 400,000 Fulbrighters total. So in terms of baseline eligibility for the program, this is the U.S. scholar side of the program. So we're looking to send U.S. citizens abroad. So the baseline eligibility is U.S. citizenship. After that, it really depends on the award requirements. Some awards do require PhD or terminal degrees. Others are fine with a master's degree and significant teaching or professional experience. All of that would be outlined in the particular award description, so it's important to use that kind of as your compass as you go through the catalog. But again, keep in mind, even the awards within a particular country might differ from each other. So you'll hear it often, but it really depends on what the award description states in terms of eligibility. And if you've had a Fulbright in the past and you're interested in reapplying to the program, we ask that you wait 2 years between your scholar grants. So this would not apply to specialist or teaching student grants. All right, so let's just dive right into India. This is the spotlight that we're featuring this week. India happens to be the largest program offering in the U.S. Scholar Program. So what that means is the total number of grants available is the largest. So even though India only has two main awards, there's also an administrator's award as well, and I won't be speaking about that today, but there's two main awards that offer up to 44 grants. And these opportunities allow you to teach, to research, and also conduct a professional project. That's also something that's new this year. India is also one of the most open countries in terms of eligible host institutions. Any appropriate institution is what you'll find as the description of, you know, where you can go in the award description. And the invitation letter is also optional. So this makes it very easy, I would say, on one hand, for applicants to approach the award to India, because really it's kind of build your own project, build your own award. You'll notice in the awards catalog there are several awards that list particular hosts where the scholar must be placed or where the applicant must contact and reach out to. That's not the case for India. It's really the whole gamut of opportunities is available. If you are unsure about a particular host being eligible, I'm happy to speak with you about that. We can also get commission suggestions from the commission in Delhi as to where they would like to, you know, where they think you might be a good fit. So certainly that's one of the kind of key pieces about the award to India. There's a lot of support from the Fulbright Commission in Delhi, and we are happy to work with you as you apply. And once you become a Fulbright Scholar in India, the commission there is very active and supportive as well. In addition to the award offerings, if you were selected for an award to India, there is a mid-year conference that takes place in February. Typically in February or March, so if your grant date aligns with that conference, you would be invited, and all transportation and costs surrounding that conference would be included. So that's one of the perks of the award. And the other perk with the award, once you're in country, once you're in India, you would be eligible to apply for a regional travel grant. And that travel grant would allow you to visit another country within the South and Central Asia region to attend a conference, deliver a lecture, attend a seminar, things like that. Anything that is of interest to you and your discipline and your project, but is not directly research, kind of a nothing directly related to a research activity or undertaking. So just a brief introduction about the award and the opportunities in India. So specifically, we have two awards, and they're both called the Fulbright Nehru Awards. This is the partnership with the U.S. government and the Indian government. So India is a contributor to the Fulbright program in terms of funding. So the awards are either open to academics and professionals of all levels, or what we have for senior scholars, the Distinguished Chair Award. So starting out with the Fulbright Nehru Academic and Professional Excellence Award, there are up to 42 grants, and again, this is by far the largest offering in the catalog. The grant is for 4 to 9 months. So that means when you see that range, 4 to 9 months, it's up to the applicant to determine the grant length that they need for their project. So whether it's on the shorter end, on the longer end, it really depends on what is required. Also what the host institution, if you've been in contact with, what the host institution is looking for. You are able to teach, research, or do a combination of teaching and research, as well as conduct a professional project. So this is a new option that we have in the awards catalog. You'll see it in some other awards as well. And the professional project is typically anything that doesn't fall under traditional academic research and, you know, university teaching. So If you need to go to India, you're working on a project and you need to do some research for a book project, or there's another kind of report that you're writing, or an article that you're working on, or some kind of something that relates to your profession that requires a trip to India but is not the typical kind of academic framework, and you might not be an academic, then you could apply as a professional for a professional project. The other nice thing about the award, which makes it very open and accessible, is that it doesn't require a PhD or terminal degree, and that it also offers the flex option as well as dependent benefits. So if you bring your family and you have children accompanying you that are in K through 12, there is some funding available for their schooling fees. So that is that's what we offer with the Fulbright Nehru Academic and Professional Excellence Award. The Fulbright Nehru Distinguished Chair Award offers two grants. This is specifically for academics with a PhD, and it is a four-month grant. There is no flex option available, because the idea is that the scholar would be placed in a university and kind of serve as a chair, giving guidance to faculty, perhaps on curriculum development, advising and mentoring students, as well as teaching. So this particular award is open to teaching or teaching plus research. And the commission has also indicated the interest in having the chair serve kind of as a roving scholar. So you're available, you're able to affiliate kind of obliquely with more than one institution, although a primary affiliation is what you'll have kind of going in, and that will be your primary point of contact. But if you have other institutions in the same city that would like to have you mentor students or faculty, that could be a possibility. All right, so I want to turn it over to our distinguished alumnus, Daniel Kellen, who recently returned from his Fulbright. So, Daniel, over to you.
Thank you, Michelle. It's great to be a part of all this, and I appreciate the invitation. And I don't know where you all are in the world, but it's a good morning for my part of the world. So I was very fortunate to have the opportunity, as you can see on the slide, to be to visit and work with at the National School of Drama, the Theater and Education Wing in Tripura this past fall. The organization, the institution was very welcoming, and it was very lovely to be able to go there, because I found, even though I didn't know this was going to happen, I found that it was a very beautiful fit between what they do and what I offer. And frankly, when I initially applied for the Fulbright, I felt like I was taking a little bit of a risk, a little bit of a chance. But I, several years earlier, had learned of the National School of Drama, particularly the TIE wing there in Tripura, through people I had worked with previously in India, graduates of the program. And I remember one day saying to one of them that if I was to return to India on a Fulbright, the place that I think I would fit well would be the National School of Drama in Tripura. And lo and behold, a couple of years later, there was. It happened. You know, when I applied for this, the director of the program was, like I said, very welcoming. But there wasn't a real clear design on our part as to what exactly I was going to do. I had shared with him, you know, what it is that I'm capable of doing and what, you know, what it is that I can offer. And he shared information about the program and what it is that they do. And I wrote my application project proposal with the idea of what I think might be a good fit between the two of us. When I arrived at the National School of Drama, there was a steep learning curve, I think, about me learning about the program and what happens there on the ground. And there was also a great deal of learning on the part of the institution about exactly what it is that I do and how I fit. In my case, one of the beautiful things about the National School of Drama there in Tripura is that they have a kind of flexible schedule that they work with. And that really helped, I think, for me to fit in, because they could look at what I brought to the situation and say, here, could you do this? Here, could you do that? And so we had a kind of a nice collaborative journey together as they discovered more about me and I discovered more about them and got to know the students in that program. I think one of the things that drives me personally to go to India and work with organizations in India, because I've been very fortunate to return to India many times, apart from the Fulbright experience, is that sense of welcoming and flexibility. The world that I work in, which is teaching artistry, artists that are reaching out into the community and into schools to apply drama and theater as a way to teach and to engage with young people. That's a up and coming and still growing field. And so working with folks, people are very excited and interested in finding ways to interact, to continue to grow their skill set and grow their understanding, and so are open to multiple ways of doing things. And that's one of the things that I really enjoy about my time, and particularly at the National School of Drama, there was a sense of that flexibility to be able to find a way that we melded my work with what they do, what the program they offer to their students. I think the other thing that constantly brings me to situations like this, and this was very true at the National School of Drama, was just how much I gain out of it, how much I learn from the process. You know, I go in with a skill set to say, here's what I can offer, here's what I can do, here's what I'd be interested in, and, you know, what is it that you'd like to take advantage of? But at the same time, I'm looking at how the institution or my colleagues are challenging me to think of new ways to make the work that I do fit the situation that I'm in. So I enjoy that challenge. It's not a matter of here's what I do, and I just repeat what I've done in other situations right there in India, but I'm given the opportunity, or the challenge, I should say, to morph my work, to revise what I do to fit the situation. And I love that learning curve. I think I become a more skilled educator, a more skilled artist, because of the challenge, the healthy challenge that I face in adjusting my work to fit the situation that I'm in. So the National School of Drama in Tripura was most definitely that. And when I think back on the fact that I took a great risk, I think, in applying for this particular Fulbright, because I wasn't as fully informed about the institute and what they do. I'd had a good idea of it. I am quite amazed on how well it worked out and how the fit happened so nicely, and so it just encourages me to say, take that risk, because you know you're going to get so much more out of it than you know by putting yourself into a situation that you're unsure how it will, what the outcome will be, that you don't have specific control over it. Rather, you have this ability, this chance to just dive in and have a good time. And come out on the other side a much stronger individual, a much more skilled individual, and someone with some very strong connections. I think that's one of the beautiful things. If I'm correct, a number of people that I worked with in the National School of Drama are actually on this webinar today, and I welcome them here and miss them dearly. And I think that was part of this adventure, is forming such strong relationships with folks. So.
Wonderful.
Michelle? Yeah.
So, Daniel, could you elaborate a little bit on, and I think these are really good points that you brought up, is kind of just giving it a chance, going for it, and really kind of there's that give and take and the learning that happens on both sides, that you learned a lot while you were there, and I'm sure that they learned a lot from what you were doing there. But did you have an invitation letter? And if not, how did you fashion your project statement to the National School of Drama, if you had indicated that would be your preference, and how did you address impact? What kind of impact you would have there?
Number one, I knew that if I was going to be applying for a Fulbright, I knew that I wanted to make sure that there would be some kind of fit. So in thinking about applying for this this recent Fulbright, when I was in India prior to that and got to know more about the National School of Drama in Tripura, it just kind of, you know, set off an alarm in my mind to say, you know, this would be a great place to be. This would be a lovely place for me to have an experience, not necessarily just me to teach, but me to learn as well and to discover. So I used the resources I had available to me to reach out to the National School of Drama, to the director there. And he was very kind in responding and very open. And so we worked together to, like I said, you know, kind of talk about the possibilities a little bit through, mostly through email. But yes, he did provide a letter of invitation. I mean, the interest was definitely there, and I was very pleased with that. So he also sent me a prospectus of what it is that their program does, and so I used that as the beginning to write my project title. I felt that my proposal, my project statement, needed to do two things. Number one, reflect what it is that the institution, the National School of Drama, does and is dedicated to. But at the same time, I felt like it needed to reflect something that's of interest to me. And so when I wrote my project statement, again, it was about taking risk. I just said, this is something that I think would be a very interesting experience to get into, and just wrote what I felt like something I would like to be involved in. But like I said, making sure that it fit what I understood of the National School of Drama at the time.
Great. And Daniel, could you speak a little bit about exactly what your project entailed? I mean, the title sounds great, but what was your kind of day-to-day, and who did you collaborate with the most? And if it was a teaching or a teaching research, well, it looks like it was a teaching, but how did that break down for you on a weekly basis or a daily basis?
Well, first of all, the project, The Creative and the Critical, was really talking about how the arts are a very powerful way to teach, teaching through, teaching about, teaching in the arts. And so The Creative and the Critical was really, the project statement was really about making the point that the arts are a kind of holistic way to engage young people in education. It brings them to the table as active participants. And when I wrote that project statement, there were two thoughts in my mind. Number one was, I know that the National School of Drama is a training program for young teaching artists. So my goal was to engage them in the creative and the critical, to understand the world of teaching artistry from my perspective, and how we engage younger people, elementary age, high school age, a whole variety, through a theater and drama particularly. The other side of the project statement was saying that I really like the theoretical and the practical combined together. That what I really would like to do is to go in and teach the young teaching artists, but then be able to get in to the community in some way and to be able to utilize that work to show the viability of it. That it's not enough to just be in the classroom and deal with the theoretical aspects of it. That the creative is how we learn, but the critical is we see the results of that learning. So those were my goals. I worked very closely with the director of the program, who we chatted about different things that I could do and work with the students there at the National School of Drama. And so we found different subject areas or different topic areas that I could work with those students. The National School of Drama, the Theater and Education Wing, is a certificate-based program that has 20 young teaching artists in a year's program. So I spent, you know, approximately 4 months with that group of 20. So I was with them predominantly the most. I spent most of my time directly with the young teaching artists that were in that training program. The National School of Drama there in Tripura is set up so that professionals and academics come through the program for short periods of time, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, etc. So for me to be there for 4 months was quite a different process, and so that gave me the opportunity to form a very deep relationship with the young teaching artists, and to be able to bring multiple topics with them. And I think most importantly, I got to know them so well that I could really try to design the work to be specific to the needs of each one of those 20. And that was probably the greatest part of it, is just that deep relationship of getting to know the young teaching artists.
Great. So actually, Daniel, we have had some questions come in for you, so perhaps we could tackle those directly. So let's see. The first one I have is, did you apply for the Distinguished Chair, or was it the Academic and Professional Excellence Award?
The Academic and Professional Excellence Award.
All right. Great. We had a couple of those questions. The other one is, and I like this one because having lived in India, I can understand how weather can play a role in decision making. It says, Dan, was weather a consideration when you selected your time period, and was it monsoon season?
I've been fortunate enough, as I said earlier, to have done work in many different parts of India over the past about 15 years or so. So I've experienced all kinds of weather and climate situations in India. So I don't really think about those much anymore. I think more about who I'm going to be with, and hopefully being in a part of the country that I haven't yet been a part. So Tripura was in the Northeast, which I'd never been to. The time of the year is really based on my own work back home, which is I've got to fit things around the full-time work that I do here. So those weren't considerations, but I did find myself suffering a little bit because I wasn't as prepared for the cold weather that came in toward the end of it as I thought I was, but it was okay. It was a nice change.
Great, great. And if we can go to the next slide, I just want to point out many of our applicants are familiar with India, but you were actually in a very far corner of the country, and so kind of far removed from where the Fulbright Commission was, but you also managed to get around and do a lot of different workshops in Delhi. The previous slide showed that you were in Jharkhand and at the Xavier Institute of Management, and that you did some children workshops in Delhi. If you could reflect a little bit on the experiences you had outside of your host institution, and if the Fulbright Commission or the offices across the country assisted in any way connecting you.
Yes. I mean, I've been fortunate in the fact that this last Fulbright, it was my second one, and in both instances, both the Fulbright Commission as well as the State Department would reach out to me for opportunities. It was a little harder this time around because Tripura, as you pointed out, is over there in the Northeast, so it's a little further afield from things. But I was invited to present at a conference in Delhi as part of graduates of the Fulbright Teacher Program for local teachers in India. And then while I was there, actually the director of the National School of Drama helped connect me with some folks as well. So I did a number of workshops with other organizations. But yeah, the Fulbright Commission would field requests for people that might be around that could do certain kinds of workshops. And Jharkhand was one of them that was able to fit into my schedule, and I spent a few days there. There were other requests that I wasn't able to do because once I was at the conference in Delhi, there were a number of schools that were asking if there were things that I could do. It just so happened that one of those schools was located in Tripura, so I was able to spend a couple of days outside of the capital, Agartala, working with a school in Tripura as well, just by happenstance. But I also was able to take a trip down to Mumbai and do some or at Pune, I should say, and do some work over there. But that was a personal connection that I made over the years. But yeah, the nice thing about the Fulbright is that it encourages you to be a resource. So it's not a matter of, no, that's the thing you've chosen to do, stay right there. It's more like, as we can make it happen, let's give you the opportunity and other people the opportunity to have you come and do work in other places. And that's one of the beauties. I'll speak highly of the regional travel, which is that, you know, once you've got your Fulbright and you're there in India, then there's this other grant that you can apply for to take you to another place. During my first Fulbright, I was able to do a side trip to Sri Lanka and participate in a conference over there. This time it didn't work out, but I still think it's a lovely thing to have the second opportunity to travel to a nearby country and do additional work related to what you're doing. So I think that's one of the beauties of this, yeah.
Wonderful. No, I love the point you brought up is that Fulbright really wants to get you that exposure, not just, you know, stick you in your host institution and stay there for the duration, but really to have you serve as a resource and let it be known that you are a Fulbrighter there for that time. So I think that's great. We have a question, Daniel, for you. It's, can you speak about the balance between having a defined project in the project statement and then leaving it flexible for the host institution? So how did you strike that balance?
You know, I think the thing about the project statement is what I said before. And in when I've approached the project statement, the first and foremost, I wanted to make sure that I was responding to what I understood of the institution or the organization I was working with. That was first and foremost, which is for me the most important way that I was the way I approached the Fulbright was I really wanted to know the organization I was going to work with. I couldn't imagine myself, maybe it's possible, but I couldn't for myself imagine just kind of writing a project statement and then just being placed somewhere that I wouldn't know much about. Mine really wanted to reflect the situation that I would be potentially stepping into. The second part of the project statement was really being able to say, this is something that reflects me, something that I'm interested in. I feel like I'm going to get something out of this. Then the third piece that I would say is that I think what's nice with the Fulbright Commission is there's an understanding that things may not play out exactly as you plan them to be. That the project statement isn't full of a checklist of did you do that, did you do that, did you do that. Rather, the project statement is giving an insight into you as a scholar or a professional and coming to understand better the way you approach your work, the way you think about your work, and how that might fit within some institution there in India. So I think there's a great recognition that there is going to be changes, and I think that's encouraged to have that flexibility to adjust as you go along. Did everything I outline in my project statement happen when I was at the National School of Drama? No, not exactly in the way it's laid out, but that wasn't the point. The point was to give a foundation for how I would work in collaboration with the National School of Drama, and how can you predict what's going to happen over, you know, a four-month period completely. So I think that's an important piece as well, is know that there's going to be some flexibility. You know, it's not writing I'm not encouraging to write a vague statement. I think it should be very specific based on your institution and what it is that drives you as a professional or as a scholar, but at the same time recognizing that it may not work exactly that way, and that's the beauty of going on a Fulbright.
Great. No, absolutely. And every Fulbrighter knows that having a scope for flexibility, having that ability to be flexible and adaptable certainly is key and necessary, because things won't always play out so according to plan. So, yes. We have some more questions. Let's see. Did you initially approach the host institution with an email, and did you think the host was open about the expectations and the project outline as you were? So I'm assuming that was okay because it ended up working out. But was the initial communication via email?
The initial communication was definitely by email. The director of the program and myself, I think the first time we actually directly spoke with each other was when I arrived at the airport in Agartala. And we got to see each other and speak with each other directly for the first time, which was fine. I think when I first reached out, it was with the idea that I would want to respond in a way that was comfortable for both of us. And I think there were enough language differences that it was important to give some space for the conversation to evolve over time, so we could, you know, understand. And I recognized that there was some time needed to kind of sit back and think about, you know, how this would work, both on his side as well as my own. So the email was, I don't want to say a slow process, but it took time. But I think that time was necessary to make sense out of how to make this the best possible fit that it could be. I think I've discovered since then that maybe many people are a little more comfortable working with text-based communication, things like WhatsApp and whatever, but I think that requires a more of a relationship by the time you're there. I just find that sometimes it takes some time for the communication to evolve, as you, and this is not just about the Fulbright at the National School of Drama, but also in just connecting with people around the country as I did other programs, is some space needs to be given because there's just some time needed to think about it. So kind of let it evolve as it will. There's nothing wrong with reaching back out and saying, hello, I'm just reconnecting. You know, I do that often, but I just recognize the need to make sense out of it within anybody else, each other's scope.
Great. Yeah, no, absolutely. And that brings us actually to our next slide, which before we take more questions, give you more questions, Daniel, I wanted to briefly go over, because we're getting a lot of questions about the application process. So the components are outlined here. So essentially, aside from the online application form, we've been talking about the project statement. That is kind of the key piece of this, and that's a 3-to-5-page project proposal. Again, a lot of what we have here outlined has page limits or size kind of file limits. The tailored CV, 6 pages or 8 pages if you're applying for the chair award. And then we're getting a lot of questions about recommendations and the invitation. So let me just address that now. We knew this year we only require 2. So typically in the past it was 3 letters of recommendation. That would be colleagues, peers of yours that can speak to your ability to carry out the proposal, the project, or the teaching that you're proposing to do. And then, if required, but India does not require it, the language proficiency report. So some countries do have a language requirement. And then the invitation. So that's kind of what we've been talking about with the, you know, the host institution providing an invitation letter. So for India, it's optional, but it certainly does help to A, either indicate and identify a host institution in your project statement, or B, get the letter and have it attached to your application. And if that's not possible, any kind of email communication that you have attaching that in place of the invitation, letting the commission know, letting the review committees know that you have been in touch. Ultimately, it didn't result in a formal invitation on letterhead, but nevertheless, you do have a clear kind of welcoming, you know, welcome green light kind of signal from the host institution. And then depending on your discipline, we do ask for supplemental materials. So Daniel, I actually didn't ask that to you in our talk earlier. Did you, since you're from theater, did you have to provide any supplemental kind of portfolio kind of files?
In this instance, yes, I provided syllabi, the course syllabi. So just an example of the kinds of work that I've done before in similar settings. That was the only particular piece. Actually, no, I guess that's not true. I did do a bibliography as well. Sorry, it's been a little while since the application. But yes, sure. Those two pieces I did provide.
Okay, great. And then I wanted to share a little bit about the project statement. So if we go to the next slide, just to give you an idea of what the project statement slide, let's see if we can get that. Next slide, please. Okay, so yes, the project statement. And something that's new this year is that we have separated some of the questions from the application, the project statement that we're seeking, and we've separated those out into the application so you have more space in your project proposal. So again, it's a 3 to 5 page proposal, and it should really focus on what you plan to do, how you plan to do it, why that particular host institution or that country, if you're teaching, the courses you plan to teach, if you're doing research, the goals of the research, the methodology, and really to include a discussion on the impact and the outcomes, not only for you and your home institution or what you do back home, but what are the outcome and impacts for the host, whether it's the host institution or India in general. And then, of course, speaking to your interest in the Fulbright program, those are kind of short answer questions in the application form. Why this particular country? How, you know, speaking to your adaptability, how adaptable are you to, you know, challenging or changing situations, and how you will adapt your materials for to suit the host culture. So I think, Daniel, that actually is something that you were kind of familiar with, having been back and forth to India. It's not that you would take exactly the same syllabus that you had in Hawaii and use it in India. I suppose there was some kind of changes that were made. Is that right?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think I look at those last questions, adaptable and deal with challenging situations and adapt your materials for your host country. I've been fortunate to work in multiple countries over the years, and I think that, you know, my early years, that was the learning curve, was to quit thinking of myself as bringing in something special for someone, but rather to know that I was presenting myself and finding a way to balance that in the situation that I was in. So I think that's the greatest part of it, is that it's not a matter of how adaptable are you or how well do you deal with challenging situations. It's kind of, to me, how open are you to all of that? Are you ready to step into a situation that, you know, things are going to be different than the norms that you're used to in the way that you teach, who you teach, the way people respond to it, you know, the way that the institution is run, whatever. So as a project statement is created, I think that's a key piece to it, is just to imagine, you know, how you are going to, you know, be enriched by this experience, and the openness and willingness to say, you know, it's not like I'm getting in my car and going off to work. You know, I'm going to a whole new situation, and on a daily basis, things may be changing. And are you ready to have that kind of learning going on daily? And are you open to hearing what others have to say so that you enrich your own work as a part of it?
Great. Now, and this brings me to the next question. So, Daniel, could you speak a little bit about the benefits of doing a Fulbright? You know, in this case, it was a teaching Fulbright. So how did that impact you coming back to Hawaii? And also something, what impressed you about your colleagues or the students that you taught?
Well, certainly coming back home, you know, I think, you know, just the fact that my teaching has been enriched in the way that I reach out to the students and the young people that I work with. You know, I think it definitely connects to that last piece, which is that idea of adaptability, of relaxing a little bit into the situation, and allowing yourself to constantly be ready to be open to the situations that are given to you. And I think that's sounds simple, but I think it's a valuable lesson that I've learned from experiences like being at the National School of Drama. And that points a great deal to the people that I worked with there. You know, I just found, in particularly in this situation with the National School of Drama and the young teaching artists that were there and the director of the program, just a kind of open flexibility about things and being able to just take it as it comes, which is so fantastic, that there wasn't a stress about making things work the way they have to be, but rather dealing with the way that things can be. And I was quite impressed by that. At one point, I wrote a short blog to my friends back home about how impressed I was with these 20 young teaching artists that were boarders in this program. So they're there all the time, 24 hours a day. And how well that they just got along with each other and made good with the situation no matter what they were put into. And with the National School of Drama on a daily basis, there sometimes can be some last minute changes, and the students just kind of go with it. They show up, and it's like, here's what you're going to do today, and maybe they weren't expecting it, but it's like, okay, we'll go that direction today. And I think that's something that that rubbed off on me quite a bit, is being able to say, you know, changes are going to come, things are going to happen, and we just need to know that we're all kind of in this together and make good with it. So I admired that about the people that I worked with there in that situation, and I think about it quite often.
No, that's wonderful. I love hearing that, and I think it's absolutely true. In different places that I've been in India, where there's a lot of openness and flexibility and kind of take it as it comes. So, great. So, Daniel, we have another question. Did you actually have any barriers or any difficulties with language, any kind of difficulties, not just maybe if everyone spoke English at your host, but at NSD, but day-to-day shopping, going out, things like that?
Oh, sure. I mean, that came up on occasion. But again, I just think there was a kind of quality to most of the situations where, you know, we'll deal with it. It doesn't matter whether or not we speak the exact same words as each other. We'll figure out what it is we need from each other, and, you know, we'll make good with that. And I think there was an inherent curiosity in many cases. I mean, where I was located, there haven't been a whole lot of Americans there. So there was just a kind of sense of, you know, newness about me walking into a shop or whatever. And so if there was, you know, some language issues, didn't matter. If necessary, I'd find somebody that was walking by on the street that might be able to speak the language and help me, be able to describe what I need or whatever. So, you know, it never mattered. People were always ready to help. You know, if there's someone sitting in an auto rickshaw and stops at a stoplight and you have a question, just ask them. Everybody's like, yeah, fine, we'll help you figure it out. So definitely, I mean, even with my students, there were some that spoke English better and some that didn't. But, you know, within the group, we'd figure out a way to get past that. The very last workshop that I did before I left, and this workshop started, I think, if I remember right, started on Christmas Day. I was working with a group of teachers from a tribal area in Tripura, and they spoke a very regional language, Kokborok, and there was a young man I'd worked with that was from that area, so they brought him in to assist me, and then there was a young woman who was one of my students at NSD, and they brought her in to work with me, and between us, there was about 5 different languages that were being spoken to make sense out of the workshop as we proceeded.
Wow.
So we just had to kind of take the time, you know, to do the translations that were necessary at any given moment. And it was learning to just trust that those 2 young people, I would just trust that they would work with the teachers as necessary to help them understand when I wasn't capable of doing that through language. But we could do it just through the relationships that we formed with each other.
Oh, that's wonderful. Great. Yeah, that's, again, speaking to being flexible as a Fulbrighter. Absolutely. Let's go to the next slide so we can share a little bit about host institution. We're getting a lot of questions about that, so I wanted to just address it head on. In the award description, and this is the snippet from the award description to India, the main award, the Academic and Professional Excellence Award. So you will see that the invitation letter from the host is optional, but in that additional information below, it suggests that applicants are encouraged to identify appropriate host institutions for their project. And if you don't have a preferred host, the commission known as USIF, the U.S. India Education Foundation, will be happy to assist. And I am also happy to connect to them to get suggestions for you if you'd like to contact people to get an invitation letter. And then, if you, as I mentioned, if you don't have an invitation, it does mention that you can include the correspondence, the email chain, kind of as a PDF file in place of the invitation letter. So that's one thing. And keep in mind that even if you do have an invitation letter, that it is a non-binding expression of interest, and that there might be several people that are receiving this invitation letter from that particular host. So, and especially that might be the case in the big cities and the large university institutions like University of Delhi and things like that. The invitation letter ideally should come from the person that you hope to collaborate with, that you're planning to collaborate with, and that person should really outline in the invitation, you know, when you'll be coming, the duration of your visit, what you'll be doing, how they'll be working with you, and also ideally speak to the impact and kind of the outcomes that they anticipate. That would really be beneficial. And the letter ideally should be on institutional letterhead. So that's just some guidance there. And I wanted to share another slide that has just some idea. I know that Daniel kind of represents the theater and the art world, but India, again, is open to applications from all disciplines. So if you'll see, there's been a lot of different projects ranging from STEM to music to, you know, theater, data and kind of statistics, things like that, and also agriculture. So I just wanted to kind of share some recent projects and the host institutions and all of that so that you can see that really there is no kind of limit to your imagination as to what you could do in India. It's a huge country. It's got a vast array of facilities and departments and types of affiliations. As I mentioned, it's not just colleges or universities that can serve as hosts. So that's something that I wanted to share. And if we could go to the last slide, I wanted to give my contact information so that if I'm not able to get to your question today in the webinar, feel free to reach out to me, and it's coming here on the slide right now, southcentralasia@iie.org. If we can get the next slide. There it is, yep. southcentralasia@iie.org. That is my direct contact for the awards to India and the region in general, the South Central Asia region. And of course, we encourage you, if you're considering applying for the September 15 deadline for opportunities in 2021 and 2022, that would be this year's deadline of September 15. Please reach out to us and begin your application as soon as possible. This is the best time to start. You've got plenty of time to start developing contacts and getting everything in order. So let's go back to our question box and see what else we've got. We've got about 7 minutes left. We have a question. How much did you have in terms of interaction? How much interaction did you have with other U.S. Fulbrighters while you were in India, Daniel?
I met a couple when I was at this conference in Delhi, but other than that, none. In both my experiences, my interaction has been very limited, unfortunately. I think that might have a lot to do with, number one, both what I do, and in this particular case, Tripur was far enough afield that there weren't anybody kind of nearby in that situation. So unfortunately, I don't have much to speak on that one.
Sure, no problem. Being definitely in that part of the country, it's understandable. It's kind of cut off. Let's see. We have a generic question. Does the Fulbright Commission work with newer private universities in India, such as Ashoka in Delhi, or mainly with public? And the answer to that is yes. We've had several Fulbrighters placed at Ashoka. So certainly Ashoka, Amity, O.P. Jindal, others that as long as they're accredited, and if you're not sure about that, please reach out to me. I'm happy to confirm with the commission. But you're more than welcome to visit the Fulbright Scholar directory. That's on our website, cies.org. And if you go to the directory, you can actually search all of the Fulbrighters in the past 10 years. And if you'd like to search by host institution, you can actually put in a search for Ashoka and get a list of Fulbrighters who have affiliated there. So the Scholar directory is a great resource. Let's see what else we've got. Okay, we already hit on the support from the commission. We have a question about, do most of the 42 grantees under the Academic and Professional Excellence Award bring family members? I don't think you were you at the orientation at the commission in Delhi? Were you part of that, Daniel? Did you get to meet others?
No, I didn't get to, no.
Okay, I would say it's probably less than half, but there is a good number because I have heard many people bring their families, and in fact, if you'd like to connect with Fulbrighters who brought their children with them, I'm happy to connect you with them. Because we do have dependent benefits, so I know that people do take advantage of that, especially if they're doing a longer-term Fulbright, and they'd like to have their children have that experience. So, all right, let's see. Oh, Daniel, we have a question for you. What was your experience at the Center for Peace and Justice? I take it that was the center at Jharkhand.
Oh, my experience, yes. That one was one of several that were teacher workshops. So that was something that I did quite a bit, was workshops directly for teachers. And I think the center was very interested in how they could reach out to their surrounding community of schools and et cetera, through the work that I was doing. But they were exceedingly welcoming and very kind. It was a very brief program. I only had about 2.5 days or so of a workshop with local teachers, but the teachers were very excited. The program directors that brought me in were very supportive, and as often there was a lot of talk about repeating programs like this in the future. But I really enjoyed being at that place. I mean, it was a very different kind of institute than I was used to being at in India because it's not related to the arts directly. While I was there, they actually set me up, which is what happens often in these situations, is I was there to do this 2.5 day workshop with teachers, but then it was like, well, there's a couple of student groups that are working with, informally with drama and theater, and they're wondering if you would spend some time with them and help them on their work, and it was like, yeah, great, that's fantastic. So I find that kind of stuff a whole lot of joy, is that you get into some of these unexpected things that, you didn't initially plan for, and so I have these new experiences as well, but I really enjoyed being there in that short amount of time that I was able to visit.
Great, wonderful. So actually, we just have a couple minutes left, and we still have a lot of questions that we were not able to get to. So I wanted to point out some resources for those of you that have questions about the host institution that you're interested in or the teaching research ratio, et cetera. So first of all, I wanted to show our awards catalog and where you can find out more information. So you'll see you can select search awards or search directly for India, and at the bottom of the page you'll have eligibility and the timeline review and all of that. If we go to, right there. And if we click on India and search the awards, I want to show you where you can reach out to not only me, where you'll find my contact information, but also we have weekly office hours. And so at the bottom of the award, you'll see the office hour link. And if you click on that, you'll see that Tuesday afternoons, at least it's 4 p.m. in New York and Washington, Tuesday afternoons is when we hold the South and Central Asia office hours. So if you'd like to pop in and you have a few questions, I'm happy to answer those as well. And again, my contact is southcentralasia@iie.org. Any questions about host institutions, about appropriate projects, things like that, I'm happy to answer. And also the ratio. The award to India for teaching and research, if you're interested in doing a combination, allows you to determine that ratio. So if you would like to do 70% teaching and 30% research, or vice versa, more research and less teaching, you're able to propose that, and that should be reflected in your project statement. The last page I wanted to bring you to was the directory, and this is where I mentioned earlier, if you're unsure about, if you don't have any contacts, but you know that you'd like to reach out to a particular institution, feel free to contact our alumni And I would also say, Daniel, are you open to having people contact you? I could
yes,
put that out there.
Yes, definitely. No, I would. Okay. I would be quite happy to hear from people.
Okay, excellent. So Daniel is also available. So if you'd like to connect with him, just please email me, and I'm happy to put you in touch. But if you go to the advanced filters in our Scholar directory, again, this goes back 10 years. If you type in India in the program country, you will get not only the U.S. scholars who have gone to India, but the Indian scholars who have come to the U.S., that might be a more fruitful search, because then you will see where they're coming from, and perhaps that might be a good way to say, oh, look, I saw that you were a Fulbrighter here, and you're from the Nehru Memorial Museum and Library in Delhi. I would love to be there. Can you connect me with who would be able to write an invitation? So that's really a great resource, and lots of Fulbrighters listed to India and have coming from India to the U.S. So I think on that note, we've got to wrap it up. We're at time. So I want to thank our Fulbrighter who joined us today, Daniel A. Kellen of the Honolulu Theater for Youth. Thank you so much for taking your early morning to join us today on with the webinar. And it looks like somebody from NSD Tripura was also on the line, and he wants to thank you again. And he expresses that they miss you over there.
Yeah, that was nice to hear. Well, thank you very much for inviting me. I appreciate being here this morning.
Great. Thank you so much. And for all of you, excuse me, this webinar has been recorded. It will be in our archive in a few days. And again, please reach out if you have any other questions. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.